If you're a sports fan, you no doubt know the name Mark Cuban. He is the Maverick owner of the Dallas Mavericks NBA team. He is also involved in many other enterprises, many of them high-tech, which is why I wanted to have him on here today to talk about him. He's got a company called 2929 Entertainment. He's one of the owners of Landmark Theaters, which runs the Tivoli and the cinema at Plaza Frontenac and the High Point Theater here in St. Louis. He also has a company called HDNet. He was listed by Forbes as the 164th richest American and joins me here this afternoon on KMOX. Do you care that you're number 164, Mark? Are you jealous of the 163 ahead of you?
No, you know, as long as you're on the list, you got nothing to worry about.
I would think number 400 has nothing to be really mad about.
Well, exactly right, and even as 401.
Yeah, true. Thanks for coming on today. I want to talk to you about technology stuff, and maybe we'll get to some sports stuff later on. I know you're very involved in this, and one of the things that you're involved in now is the release of this new Steven Soderbergh movie, Bubble.
Right.
And it's the first movie, as I understand it, released on multiple platforms. What does that mean?
Well, what it means is, you know, traditionally Hollywood says, we're going to put out movies how we want them, where we want them. So we'll put it in a theater day one, and then it has to go to TV, or then it goes to DVD, then it goes to rental. There's just a series of windows. And we looked at it and we said, you know what? People want movies when they want movies. You know, there's lots of movies we want to go see, but, you know, we can't, you know, get someone to babysit the kids, and then we have to wait for the DVD, and then by the time the DVD comes out, we lost interest in that movie. So we just decided we're going to try to give the consumer movies how they want them, where they want them, when they want them. And Bubble is a little movie we did with Steven Soderbergh. It's kind of a character study murder mystery in an industrial town in West Virginia. And we released it in theaters. It's playing in St. Louis at the theaters you mentioned. We also made it available on DVD. So starting today, you can go into your local Walmart or Best Buy or go to Amazon.com online and buy it. You could have pre-ordered it, so it showed up today if you felt like. And then it also showed this past Friday for two showings at 8 and 11 on HDNet Movies, which is available from Charter Cable, from DirecTV, from Dish, from Time Warner, pretty much most cable and satellite providers.
Which came first, the delivery idea or the movie idea?
The movie idea, actually. Kind of the genesis of the whole thing is we started HDNet in 2001 because I saw a huge hole for programming for people who were buying high-definition sets. Everybody else was saying, you know, a high-def set costs $8,000 and not going to come down in price. And I looked at it and I said, that's just a PC. You know, and it's going to follow the same price performance curve as personal computers do. And so a high-def television set is going to come down in price and go up in features. And we better get a head start before everybody realizes that. So we started HDNet and HDNet Movies in September of 2001. And that, you know, started going and growing. And then about 2 years ago, we added the Landmark Theater chain. And my partner, Todd Wagner, in parallel to that, you know, was learning about the movie industry and wanted to produce some movies. And I went to him and said, look, Todd, you know, we've got theaters, we've got TV networks. It's time we really kicked into movie production. Let's go after it. And wouldn't it be really cool if we could break the paradigm and produce movies that we release on all platforms at the same time? So it kind of was three different things happening at the same time. But when we took a step back and ask what the best way to do things and the best way to reach consumers, the day-and-date approach made perfect sense.
You know, you talked about something that I also have been talking about for quite a while here, which is that whole new business paradigm of distributing content. I like to think of myself as a content provider. You know, I do a radio show 5 days a week. I've got a very popular website. I'm writing op-ed pieces for the newspaper. I'm blogging. I'm doing all sorts of stuff. And the idea is get it to the consumer in a way that they can use it when, how, and where they want. And that's what you're trying to do with movies now.
Exactly. I mean, we started the same concept way back when with Broadcast.com in 1995, and KMOX was one of our first stations. And, you know, back then it was the concept of getting great radio content and sports to people anywhere in the world. But now, you know, convergence is dead. We're no longer converging analog and digital. Analog is out of the way, and pretty much all content now is digital. And because it's digital, bits are bits. So it's just a question of encoding it and making it available to any and all digital devices, wherever, however people want to receive it. You know, you're exactly right. Content is easily distributable.
By the way, just a side note, wasn't it horrible the way Yahoo blew that?
You know, in hindsight, you know, if you look at all the things that are going on now on the Internet with multimedia being the hot space, it's exactly what we told Yahoo would happen. And, You know, I went back and looked at one of the early proposals I made to Yahoo after they bought us about how user-generated content, whether they're blogs, podcasts, you know, video hosting, whatever it may be, was going to dominate the net. And, you know, when their stock price tanked, they kind of just walked away from all that. But, hey, woulda, coulda, shoulda, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We'll have to have another discussion another day about what I think they did wrong there, too. But in the meantime, here you are releasing stuff that normally would go into the theater and have that window, as you said, of 6 months or so before it went elsewhere. If I'm a movie theater owner, am I mad at you now for taking my movie and making it available the same day to somebody to watch in their home?
Well, you shouldn't be. I mean, as an owner of Landmark Theater, we think it's an opportunity. I mean, the thing all movie owners, movie theater owners, whether it's Landmark or otherwise, need to ask is, what business are you in? You know, are you in the business of just showing movies and trying to sell popcorn? Or are you in the entertainment business where you're trying to create a great experience so people have an incentive to get out of the home? You know, I own the Dallas Mavericks, and every single one of our games is on television. Yet we've sold out 100-plus games in a row. Why do people want to go? For the experience. They could stay home and watch it on TV, but the experience is much different. And I think theater owners have lost track of that. You know, different people expect different experiences in theaters. And at Landmark, we gear all of our movies towards I don't want to say older, but, you know, a 25-plus demographic, people who are looking for independent and art house films. And you're not going to come in and see King Kong playing. You're not going to see Spider-Man playing. You're not going to see, you know, the latest horror flick where Hostel or Saw 2 playing, where everybody's screaming at the theaters. And I think, you know, we're not perfect, but we create an expectation of experience, and the big multiplexes don't necessarily do that. Somebody could go to see one of our movies, let's say Good Night and Good Luck, and right next to it is Hostel, and right next to it is, you know, a kid's movie, and you've got these three different generations that are conflicting the minute they get out of their car. You know, somebody's jamming rap in the boombox in the parking lot, and, you know, there's a long line, and then you get into the screen in the theaters, there's kids screaming and yelling at the screen, and that turns people off to the theater-going experience, and that's what needs to be corrected. The release pattern, if anything, it gets people more involved and excited about movies. Look what happened with iPod and downloads. Those shows that were downloaded saw their ratings go up.
Yep. That's exactly what's happening with things like The Office, which is the most downloaded thing on iTunes now.
And they know who their demographic is, and they're enabling it, and that draws people to the show. And this is no different. You know, if I can't see a film, if I can't make it to go see Bubble in the Frontenac and I want to see it, well, I could just go buy it, or I could have seen it on HDNet, and that's going to make me more of a movie fan, I'm more appreciative. And then if I also know when I go to the theater that it's really a special experience, and I think that's really the key to successful theaters.
All right, now you mentioned that twice. What are they doing wrong besides mixing demographics and movies?
Well, they're trying, you know, in L.A., I'll give you the perfect example. In L.A., they search you for cell phones. They search you in first week or in opening night for video cameras. No one wants to go out if you're going to get searched. You know, they're talking about jamming cell phones so people can't talk to your cell phones. Well, you know, if you're a 16, 18, 20-year-old kid, part of the experience of going to see a movie is texting, you know, to your friends two rows ahead or, you know, who couldn't make it, who's sick at home, what's going on in the movie. That's what makes the experience special to a 16-year-old, but ruins it for a 35-year-old. And so, you know, besides just mixing, you've got to be able to enhance that experience.
Do you also enhance it with new technologies inside the theater? Is there something new about the way a movie gets to my eyeballs in that movie theater?
Well, sure. I mean, that's a nice setup. Thank you. You know, if you have digital projection, then that makes the experience better, not because it's necessarily prettier than film, but because it doesn't deteriorate over time. If you're like me, I hate to go to movies opening weekend. Hate it. But I'll wait till the crowds die down and, you know, and the theater's a little emptier and go see a movie then. But then you're also seeing all the cracks, all the pops, all the dirt, you know, on because the quality of the film deteriorates as it's run against the heat from the ball. And that's not fair. With the digital projection, you don't have that. The 400th showing is just as crisp as the very first showing. And that's a good thing. Plus, digital projection gives you a lot more flexibility. It's expensive to create a film print and then to distribute it and ship it around. If there's a new movie that all of a sudden gains popularity and you want to expand the number of screens, with digital, you can have it almost instantaneously if you do satellite distribution to the screen, or, you know, next day if you just ship hard drive. So there's a lot more flexibility. You know, we're also looking at things like having little earphone jacks or speaker jacks, rather, in the seat so that you could just plug your iPod, little ear pods into them and get a completely different audio experience. There's so many different things you can try, but the theater owners, you know, they're kind of, it's the innovator's dilemma. They're kind of protect themselves as opposed to expand and improve the experience.
If somebody does show a movie like Bubble that's simultaneously released in the theaters and on DVD, do the theater owners get a share of the DVD revenue?
Yeah, and that's a new thing that we started with the Enron release. We'll give them 1% of the DVD revenue. And 1% of the DVD revenues will go to theater owners and will be split among them based on the number of weeks that it's shown in that screen. So, yeah, they'll get a whole new source of revenue, which to them is like a pre-good weekend. Plus, they'll also get the opportunity to sell the DVD. And we sold a bunch of units of Bubble in theater, and the economics are such that, you know, if you sell it for $29.95, which is what it was sold for, or $24.95, depending on the screen in theater, and your wholesale cost is $12, that $12 of gross margin is like 3 new attendees to the screen. So it's found money that, you know, really is the equivalent of increasing attendance significantly.
You know, as you're talking about selling the DVD there, I'm thinking about, you know, taking, let's say, for example, a Pixar movie, which is going to bring in both.
Kids.
Yeah, I mean,
oh my goodness.
Can you imagine if when Finding Nemo or The Incredibles came out, on the way out, you could buy the DVD of that movie instead of having to wait 6 months with your kid bugging you every day?
Oh, I mean, one of two things would happen if they sold that movie. Parents would either buy it, or they'd have to deal with their kid laying on the floor screaming and kicking because they didn't buy it.
That's exactly
right.
And
we all know what happens. Yeah, we all know what happens when that happens. The kid always wins.
Absolutely right. You talked about how Landmark Theaters, one of the companies that you own, is into art house and indie movies. Are those just better in your view, or is it a marketing and business decision to go that way?
It's just a marketing and business decision where we want to stick to a very specific demographic. We don't want to try to be all things to all people. And, you know, we're trying to, you know, build new theaters and enhance our existing theaters on a one-by-one basis to create an environment that's just in tune to a little bit older audience, a little bit more, and I don't want to say, be snobby and say intellectual, but just people who like films that make you think. You know, there's a place for bombs and CGI and special effects and, you know, car chases and all that kind of stuff. And, I mean, I like those movies just as much. I love horror films. But, you know, that's a different environment than going to see, you know, Capote or Good Night and Good Luck. And you know, when you see those movies, you come out talking, and you it's just a whole different audience mindset.
So this is not you fed up with Hollywood?
No, it's not so much that at all. I think it's just a good business move on our part. You know, we want people to trust Landmark's decision. So, you know, there's so many nights where we are sitting there saying, you know, what do you want to do tonight? And we want people to be able to say, well, you know, let's just drive by the Frontenac. Something will be playing there that we like. They always have interesting stuff.
Yeah.
And we want people to be able to trust our judgment in how we select movies. We don't want them to drive up and say, what are they doing playing King Kong here? Look at all these kids hanging out.
How successful does Bubble have to be?
It doesn't have to be. I mean, it's profitable, and that's all it has to do. You know, we don't have to meet any traditional benchmarks because we're inventing all new benchmarks. It, you know, we generated more than $5 million in revenue on this opening weekend, which is two or three times as much we could have ever hoped to generate in the life of the movie had we released it any other way.
Do you already have other projects in the pipeline for this?
Oh, yeah. We've got, you know, if anybody wants to check out what we're working on, if you go to hdnetfilms.com, you know, we've got a Herbie Hancock concert with Sting and Christina Aguilera. And a bunch of other people he invited. We've got One Last Thing with Cynthia Nixon and Wycliffe Shawn and Ethan Hawke. We've got Diggers with Paul Rudd and Lauren Ambrose. We've got Anthony LaPaglia and Isabella Rossellini and All Fall Down. So we've got a whole slate that we're working on a schedule for.
I got a whole bunch of other things I want to talk to you about, particularly in the online world, which I know you're also involved in,
sure.
And sports stuff, too. We got to touch on that. So stand by for just a moment, and we'll come back with Mark Cuban. You know him from the Dallas Mavericks. You know him from HDNet. He's one of the co-owners of Landmark Theaters and one of the people behind this new Steven Soderbergh movie, Bubble, that's in theaters and on DVD now. It's the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX. During the commercial break, we checked our records. It turns out Mark Cuban is the richest guest I've ever had on this show. Well, you know, we thought that maybe at one point I had talked to Warren Buffett. Turns out not so much. Anyway, Mark is on the phone with me now, and you know him as the owner of the Dallas Mavericks and all the high-tech stuff he's involved in the movie theaters we got to. But let's talk about sports here for just a moment. Mark, you want to buy an NHL team?
Oh, you know what? I got asked that a ton on the Blues. What a great history. And, you know, if I'd grown up in St. Louis, and, you know, it's funny, when I went to school at Indiana University, I had two girlfriends in college, and they both were from Ledoux.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and I'll tell you, now, the Ledoux connections, I'm interviewing somebody, just took a break from interviewing somebody for Landmark, and she went to high school at Ledoux. So, I don't know, I've got this strange connection to Ledoux High School.
Well, you know, the Lories are gutting this team like crazy. It's the worst gutting of a team since the Florida Marlins after the World Series, where they sold everybody off. What do you think of owners who do something like that?
You know, everybody's got their own logic. I don't know if it's personal issues with them or they're trying to send a message. It's so visible. All the moves you make in sports are so visible that it's hard. The fact that the only feedback you ever get from the sports media, it's really hard to really understand what's going on from the outside. So I'll reserve judgment or comment because I know what people have said about me, and it's just, you know, you don't know until you know.
Is the only thing keeping you from buying the Blues the fact that you don't live here? Because I got a couch you can stay on.
Growing up in Ledoux, I'd probably be there. I don't know. You know, the other thing is my wife would divorce me. She knows how much time I spend on the Mavericks and or how involved I get with the Mavericks now. I think she'd kill me.
I heard that you also looked into buying the Pittsburgh Pirates. Are you going to try to get into other sports, or is she stopping you from doing that too?
Yeah, well, I looked at buying the Penguins before I even looked at the Mavericks, and that didn't work out, fortunately. But I looked at the Pirates, just again, hometown team that, you know, hadn't won in forever. And I've taken a look, but they don't want to sell. And I've vacillated back and forth, you know, where I was begging her to let me in. You know, I don't know, to be honest with you. It's something I consider. I think with all is said and done, if there's a group that goes in to probably participate as opposed to be the lead.
What do you think about the battle that goes on now between sports team owners and the cities when it comes to new arenas, new stadiums, new ballparks?
Honestly, it really depends on the city and what the circumstances are. There's some cities that look at it as cachet, you know, because their name's being mentioned. It creates visibility for the city. It's a great marketing tool. It's a great way to draw conventions. And then there's other cities which are big and don't need that cachet, where it's just a straight business deal, and it really just depends by city. You know, New York, you know, Boston, you've seen them self-finance in some cases. And, you know, other cities, Dallas has been a mixture. You know, the city put up a little bit, but we put up the most. And other cities it needs to be, that are smaller cities, it needs to be almost all of it, because it really, you know, Pittsburgh's a perfect example. Pittsburgh itself, just in its own usage, is couldn't build a replacement for the Civic Arena, the Mellon Arena, whatever they're calling it now. It would definitely need help. But, you know, in a city like New York, the same thing would be easy to self-finance.
Yeah, and you could also see how the public would react if a guy like you went to them and said, I can't afford to build a new arena.
Yeah, I mean, that's crazy. You know what? It really, if I was an owner coming in, I would just be straight honest about it. It's not that you can't afford it. I would just be very very crystal clear about all the numbers and just show them everything. I wouldn't try to hide anything. Here's what I would make. Here's what the numbers are. You know, you can understand why I think what I think, and we either are partners in this or we're not.
As an NBA owner, what did you think of the Antonio Davis incident a couple of weeks ago where he went into the stands?
I think he should have got suspended longer. I understand why they mitigated the circumstances, but I think you just have to have a hard and fast rule that, you know, you're gone, and five games, I guess, if you look at just what he did and how it played out, five games is fair, but I don't think it should have been fair. I think, you know, you don't want players trying to make a decision in the middle of the game. Is this going to be fair or not fair? You know, there are security people available, and they're there for every team. They're right at the bench, and all he had to do was run over to their security guy and say, would you go up there and check on this? And so I think they should have been far more draconian, if you will, and maybe giving him 10 games.
That's got to be the look now for the new post-Ron Artest NBA?
Forget Ron Artest. I would have done it the same way either way. There's just a hard test rule, and if Ron Artest never would have happened, I still would have said the exact same thing. You know, we went through 25,000 games or whatever without anything happening, and, you know, I go to all of our games, and there's so few things that happen. It's so safe. It's crazy. But, you know, it's because of the perception that there's that little firecracker that could go off. You just have to make sure that it's never even considered. you got to be preemptive, I guess is what I'm saying.
I know one of the things that you've nurtured down in Dallas is a relationship with your fans. You're walking around the concourse. People can come up to you. They can email you. You are not shy about contact with the people who are spending their hard-earned money on your product. That said, are fans a little bit more out of control now?
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, when you put 18,000 people out there, there's always going to be a drunk and an idiot. There always is. And, you know, they're no more or less controlled. I get heckled worse than our players. And, you know, from the first games I went to the games this week, there's really no difference at all. I don't think fans are any more out of control. It's just the nature of media right now that we look to, the media looks to grab onto certain things, and whatever is the topic du jour in terms of, you know, conflict, if you will, in the sports world, that's what they're going to jump on. That's, you know, if we still have that, if it leads, it bleeds, headlines is news mentality. And, you know, that's not a knock. You got, you know, ratings and distribution and sales are critical. So, you know, it's more the perception that's created for us. But my own personal experience and those of people I've talked to, it's no more, you know, a problem than it's ever been, and it's never really been a problem.
Let's talk about some online stuff, because you've got some ventures there. You've got Ice Rocket. You've got Red Swoosh. You're involved in many of these things. And one of the things that people keep talking about with online accounts now is privacy, particularly with the Google problem recently with the government wanting records. How do we protect ourselves online, and how do you, as a provider, make sure that that line isn't crossed?
Well, I'll just tell you what I do personally. I don't care. I don't think privacy is an issue at all. I mean, if I'm really concerned about privacy, I'm more concerned about my mailbox. You know, I bet you, Paul, I could go up to your house and break into your mailbox for 30 seconds or less. You know, we're so much more at risk there, and that's not, you know, to say that personal privacy, for some people, they're concerned about it, but I just don't think your privacy is really dictated by your IP address and your activities online. And in terms of your searches, what you do there, I just don't see it as the issue that some people make it out to be. I really, really, really don't. I mean, I think there's so many other ways that we can or would be monitored if someone was trying to crack into our privacy that you know, what Google's being asked to do is really not that big a deal. So I didn't have an issue with MSN or Yahoo or any of the others when they said yes.
And what about your ventures? Do they have a policy that keeps information private?
We don't sell anything. You know, if you go to icerocket.com and do a search on blogs or do a search on any topic, that's your private information. And we aggregate the information, but we don't keep it by person.
How is the internet coming in as part of this new business paradigm we were talking about? Because you're doing movies in theaters and on DVD and on HDNet. How about the simultaneous release online?
Well, there's two pieces to that. One is where it's at now, and two is where it's going. The downloads or VOD or streaming of movies online, you know, people talk about it like it's the next Holy Grail and everything is going to be available for download. But it also creates its own set of problems, because the more popular video upload and download becomes, the more congested the last mile of the Internet becomes, which means the less fulfilling the experience is. And then if you start going towards high definition and higher quality, even with all the compression utilities that are out there, you know, now if you want to download a DVD movie that's, you know, a couple of gigabytes, you're waiting for it to download overnight. And if you've got three kids all downloading the same, you know, even if it's a BitTorrent version of a movie, you're and they're all living in the same, you know, street, you're slowing down the whole neighborhood. So I don't think it's going to happen in the macro sense that other people might. But that said, I think with the devices we're starting to carry around, the PDAs, the iPods, our cell phones, and the increments in storage that are happening there, so that, you know, this time next year your phone might have a 4 gigabyte hard drive, and you're going to be able to store all your personal pictures and all your personal music and some smaller videos. I think that's going to change how we live. I wrote a blog entry about the end of distraction, the end of boredom. And because what's happening, you know, 5 years ago, if you were bored and you were flitting around and looking for something to fill your time, you might turn on the TV if you're at home. If you're on a bus or a plane or whatever, you might, you know, pick up a book or buy some magazines. Now we turn to our laptops or iPods. We never let ourselves go without being distracted. And because of that, you know, iTunes was smart to make the cost of that just a very much a disposable buy and an impulse buy. So it's like, yeah, 99 cents, $1.99 to buy my time while I'm on the airplane. I'll do that. Or to kill the time while I'm on the train, or kill the time at lunch while I'm eating lunch by myself. So I think from a digital perspective, our ability to take any content and code it into a format that's small enough for small devices to handle has really changed our concept of free time or dead time, and really has created a whole new business. And, you know, we try to have our different entities, whether it's Ice Rocket or, you know, we have a new one called GOOWY, GOOWY.com, that's really in the middle of that really enable people to experience media in different ways.
You talk about having to wait overnight for a movie to download. I have to wait overnight for it to get to me from Netflix.
Yeah, well, exactly. But you know what? Sending sending 18 gigabyte movie overnight via Netflix is the equivalent of 20 megabits per second download.
So yeah, the pipeline is just not broad enough, is what you're saying.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Exactly right. And so we can hope, we can put all that stuff out there. But remember, those pipelines are like shared highways on the last mile. Not the backbone, but on the last mile. And so the more congested they get, the slower everybody goes. And the more video people want, the more congested they will get.
Before I let you go here, two things. One, did you regret doing The Benefactor?
No, I had a blast with it. It was a great learning experience, and it was a lot of fun. I mean, there are things I do differently the second time around.
What would you do differently? I'm curious.
I trusted the producers. People at ABC got fired right after they greenlit it, and they said, just be yourself, do your thing. And then when the new folks came in, they said, yeah, hey, these guys make these shows for a living. Trust them. And the first couple episodes, that's what I did. And, you know, I was saying stuff they were making me say instead of just doing it the way I wanted to do it. And I wouldn't make that same mistake again. I let my personality come out.
Mm. My other question for you is your pick for the Super Bowl.
The Steelers, baby. I grew up in Pittsburgh. I think they're going to do it.
Mark,
I
appreciate your time today. I hope we can talk again.
Hey, anytime, Paul. My quick plug, go see Bubble. Go buy Bubble if you haven't. And we have a new movie coming out, The World's Fastest Indian, with Anthony Hopkins. It's about Burt Monroe, who set the world land speed record in 1965 when he was 71 years old. And it's Rocky reincarnated. So go check it out. It's a great movie for the whole family.
Will that also be available on multiple platforms?
No, that unfortunately is one we purchased from somebody else, and it's only going through our distribution company, Magnolia, so we don't have the rights. It's already been, the rights were defined for us. It wasn't one we produced.
So we go see that at the Tivoli or the High Point or Plaza
exactly,
Frontenac.
Exactly. And go see it and tell me what you think. My email is Mark, M-A-R-K, @hd.net. Feel free to email me and let me know your thoughts, whether it's Bubble or The World's Fastest Indian or Enron, The Smartest Guys in the Room, which just got nominated for an Oscar today, is available on DVD as of last week as well. And I'd love to get feedback from people.
All right. Congratulations on all that, and thanks for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Thank you, Paul. Anytime. I look forward to it.
Mark Cuban here on The Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.